We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal. Boys and girls, my name is Ty Hildenbrand. That fine gentleman over there, the monster of the Midwest. The one, the only Dan Rubenstein, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. I like when you change up my introduction. It really keeps me on my toes. I'm good. I had some honey roasted peanuts. I took a shower, and now I'm talking to you. That's like the trifecta of fun times midweek. So no complaints.
And the superfecta is en route. We've got Ari Wasserman stopping by here momentarily. We want to talk to him specifically about 2023 quarterbacks.
Yes.
Notably Arch Manning. Arch Manning is the name if you followed college football, even if you don't follow college football, just if you follow football or sports, you know that Arch Manning is a thing. We will talk about Arch Manning. Is he worth the hype?
Yeah.
We don't know where he's headed. You know, you could throw a dart and find any number of like half a dozen schools that could be in the running for Arch Manning. I don't know if we'll get quite to that extreme with it, but I'm interested in talking to him about that. I know you're interested also in talking about just ramifications that we've seen from the rapid change of college football as of late. Things like NIL, transfer portal, how do you manage stuff like that from the coaching side? We'll get into all that and much, much more with our good friend Ari Wasserman. Also need to talk boat goals with Ari while we're at it. Sort of like our lane now after the last couple of
shows. I think we're just going to devolve to a place where everybody is kind of saying the same thing about big boat, the Adriatic, the Mediterranean, the French Riviera, whatever, which is good. Although, I mean, there's something to be said for a lot of different places around the world that's not in that place, but that just, I don't know. It seems pretty attractive to me. The 2023 quarterback class, to go back to that momentarily, I don't know if you have any thoughts. I don't believe Notre Dame has a quarterback committed at the moment. I don't think that domino has fallen for the Irish yet.
No.
For Marcus Freeman. Same goes for Oregon, who very much was in the hunt for Nico Yamaleva, who ended up at Tennessee with much ballyhoo, considering that might be the first time I've ever said ballyhoo on
ballyhoo?
The show. And I'm pretty happy about it. It's a fascinating class. It's a fascinating class because of NIL. It's a fascinating class because of Arch Manning, whatever he is or isn't. Obviously, he has the attention of a lot of huge schools. We had Malachi Nelson, who was committed to Oklahoma when Lincoln Riley was there.
Yeah.
And he flips. He's from Southern California. He flips to USC. And so there are a number of dominoes. I think there's a quarterback from Northern California who's considering a few big places that is a five-star. And also, fascinatingly, and I want to ask Ari about this, quarterbacks committed to non-offensive powerhouses that have options that are the schools that they're committed to are out of their geographic footprints? And is it a transfer portal thing? Is it these schools doing a better job selling themselves? Is it a schools bending over backwards? Is it an NIL thing? It's a fascinating year for quarterbacks, not the least of which reason-wise is, that's not English, is the number of coaches who are on the move. Like, what is LSU going to be doing? What is, you know, Florida going to be doing? Oregon, Notre Dame, like all of these huge places. USC moving forward after this year, obviously, is going to be a huge destination. So I think Oklahoma has a big one in the fold right now, if you're looking at the list. Is that true? I believe they do.
Yes, absolutely.
Oklahoma has like the number five or six
quarterback
in the country. Jackson Arnold, there you go. Which was the name of the father on the Wonder Years? Was he not Jack Arnold? Dan Loria, Jack Arnold. I think that's true. So this is great. This is great for us, off-season fodder. And I suppose as soon as Arch Manning makes his decision, I assume coming up, dominoes are going to fall.
Dominoes will definitely fall. We'll talk about that much more with our good friend Ari, who we haven't spoken with in, I don't know, a couple months now. So it'd be good to have him back. Don't forget, this show, all our shows, brought to you by our good friends over at Geico, driven by Geico, as we say here at the top of every episode. Subscribe and follow this podcast if you haven't already. That helps us out immeasurably so. We'd also encourage you to tell your bestest pals about the Solid Verbal. We go twice a week throughout the off season, actually thrice a week, sometimes
That's
more than
true.
Thrice weekly.
True.
Out on the Patreon of verballers.com. Where the conversation,
I got extra nuggets, Ty.
Conversation's always raging. Yes, extra nuggets. You dropped your, final episode of our limited run.
Of our limited run for now. Yeah, episode number six. The show, the trivia-based Jeopardy show, adding context to Jeopardy correct responses that I do with the voice of the Chicago Bulls, NFL on Fox, MLB on Fox, Adam Amin, dear friend of the show.
Verballers.com is where you can get all those perks. You also get access to this show, all of our shows a little early, video versions of pretty much everything we do. It's a pretty good deal. If you like the show, we appreciate your support. And last but not least, don't forget to go on out to solidgiveaway.com and get your name in the hat to win that AJ Brown signed mini helmet. We're drawing the winner next month, so you probably got about two and a half weeks before we're going to pick that winner. Going out there, a few free, quick, and easy steps to follow. Things like follow us on social media, blah, blah, blah. Some easy stuff to do. You can find it out there at solidgiveaway.com, Daniel.
Agree. You definitely can.
All right, Dan. It is that wonderful time of year again. I don't know if we brought him on this time last year. Probably at some point.
No.
Last spring.
I don't know. I don't know when the last time he was on was. During the season, at some point.
Yeah. National college football reporter for The Athletic. On his Twitter bio, it says, "Stars matter. I hate your favorite team." Ari Wasserman, welcome back to the show, sir. How you doing?
I wish I was on every week, guys. I'm so excited.
Wow.
Every single time I get that text, you have time for SV? Yeah, I've got time.
Always.
And today was actually a pretty busy day for me, and I made time.
How would Andy Staples feel hearing that?
He knows the truth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't say anything bad about our show. I just love being on this show.
Wonderful. Well, let's get things started in as light a fashion as possible. This has nothing to do with football, but you are down in Dallas. They have a big lake down there. Dan and I have been talking ad nauseum lately, and I don't really even know how we got on this topic.
Wait, we're doing this in the onset, right? To start?
We're coming in hot, Dan. We're coming in hot.
Oh, my God.
How about this?
My specialty.
I'm going to introduce the premise of Boat Goals now.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to give Ari an opportunity to think about it and then respond later.
Okay. I think he's probably already thought about it, but yes.
Hashtag boat goals. We're trying to speak it into existence, Ari. What are your boat goals? You don't have to answer now. Just think about this. I'm going to ask a recruiting question momentarily.
Give a tease.
But, you know, like we're talking about doing some sort of big boat adventure in like the bay or the harbor outside the Monte Carlo Grand Prix. All sorts of crazy stuff. Like, what would you want to do on a boat if you had limitless funds, whatever kind of boat at your disposal, et cetera, et cetera? That type of thing.
Yeah, you said I live near a lake, and my boat's not going in a freaking lake.
Exactly right. It's a good attitude to have.
So we'll talk about it.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oligarch level aspirations.
That's
from
exactly
Ari
right.
If you say money's not an object, you can automatically assume that I'm going 100% of the way with it.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not going to be one of those people just like, well, I want what I want. I'll just take a two-person sailboat and just go on and paddle.
I'm a low-key catamaran type. No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
You're
okay.
On the Bezos boat with that kind of money. All right. So,
yeah.
Ari Wasserman, the big name in recruiting right now. I mean, we just finished one recruiting cycle. We're about to start another, or the other that we'll be talking about more often is well underway. Arch Manning. Arch Manning's the name that everybody knows. Everybody is waiting with bated breath to see which direction he goes. I've heard about 1,000 different schools that might be interested. Lately, it's been a smaller handful. Let me start with a really dumb, potentially obvious question. We know he's a Manning. Is he really worth all the hype?
So that's a kind of a difficult question for me to answer because it just, there's no way to separate the hype from his name. So like, it's impossible. So what I'll say to answer that is that he is a five-star quarterback. Like if his last name was Wasserman, he would be a five-star quarterback. Now, would he be the number one overall player? Would he be gaining as much attention as he is right now? Probably not, because I think that there is a certain mythical thing about him and having two Hall of Fame uncles and his family and his last name that just exudes greatness. And the thing that I think about Arch Manning more than anything is that if you look at the schools that are pursuing him outside of Ole Miss, mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's pursuing him, but the ones that he seems to be giving the most attention in return to all have signed five-star quarterbacks in the recent past. I mean, even Texas just got Quinn Ewers last year. So it's not like he is a commodity for these schools that is irreplaceable. What I think that he is, from my viewpoint, is a almost a symbolic figure in the sense of if your school is able to get this person who doesn't speak to the media, who doesn't tweet, who has advisors on his side like Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, mm-hmm. It proves to the world that your program is the most fitting for a person of his stature, which I think matters to people. So the thing that recruiting has gotten to the point that it is because people like competing when there are no games. And it's like, what recruit could ever match the magnitude of what that commitment would mean? So if he goes to Georgia, you know, a team that has Brock Vandegrift on the roster already, it's not like Georgia is in, well, maybe, you know how my take is on walk-on quarterbacks who just won the national championship. But, you know, in order to sustain that level of success, at some point, they're going to have an NFL quarterback playing there. Do they absolutely need Arch Manning? No. Does Alabama absolutely need Arch Manning when they've got the best player in college football right now playing the quarterback position? No. All these teams won't cease to exist. But if he goes to Georgia or Texas or Alabama, what it means for that program as a destination for other players to go to, it's kind of like picking royalty. So that to me is the hype more so than his ability, because when you look at quarterbacks in this day and age, and my colleague Antonio Morales wrote a really good story about this, the amount of money people are spending, high school parents on mm-hmm. quarterback coaches and weightlifting regimen and diet and basically making these soldiers of players out of their teenagers in order to get a scholarship. I mean, a lot of times it's actually kind of funny to me because financially they're paying more than the education than and training than it is to just, right. you know, do it the right way or the wrong. There's no right or wrong way, but I'm saying the amount of money people are sinking in outweighs how much they would just pay to send their kid to school. But the quarterbacks in general, and I've been to the Elite 11, I'm going this year, I went last year, those guys on that field are all very, very, very good and a lot of times very indistinguishable from one another. Mm-hmm. And I think whether or not that they are successful in college is based on a lot of other things, not just pure talent, but fit, attitude, intangibles, all the things that, you know, coaches like to say on the podium. So is he worth the hype? I don't know if it's an easy thing to answer because I think from a talent standpoint, he's worth the hype because he's really good. But I think that the hype in this case is more valuable as it pertains to the symbolic nature of landing him than it is for what he's actually going to add athletically to a program.
I have not heard that take before, Ari. That is maybe I'm kind of just getting caught up with the 2023 cycle on the fly here, but it's definitely an interesting perspective because so much of the recruiting game, as you would know better than Dan and I, is about reputation. It is about what are we selling? What is the marketing pitch for this program? Obviously, putting guys in the NFL is one thing, but having that sort of mystique, having that aura around the program that you can attract the best,
What does that say about your school if you get Arch Manning to future quarterbacks?
Yeah,
I think the value of that is probably more important than him winning games. And I think that sometimes, like, I am a little bit more on the recruiting symbolism of everything, you know, and what it means for program rankings and stature. But, you know, I don't doubt that Arch Manning is going to be a very good college football player. But I also don't doubt that Dante Moore is going to be a very good college football player. And I don't know if the difference between those two athletically is as stark as their reputations, because everybody's heard of Arch Manning. Maybe Notre Dame fans and other fans in the Midwest and recruiting nuts know who Dante Moore is, but everybody knows who Arch Manning is. So, and it's like funny, because last year at the Elite 11, I wrote a story because Quinn Ewers was at the time the highest rated prospect of all time. And you go and you put him on the field with a bunch of other five-star quarterbacks who are doing the same drills and doing all the, you know, same workouts. And there isn't some intangible gap between Quinn Ewers' talent and everybody else on that field. So I think when you start getting to the most elite players at that position, they're very closely, you know, capable. So is Arch Manning standing above the rest of the quarterbacks and doing something that those guys can't do? I don't think so. But I think that his background, his understanding of the lifestyle, what it takes, you know, all the things that you get from being in that family, I was probably going to give him a leg up on understanding what it, you know, what you have to put in. But I don't know that I would sit here and say with a straight face that Arch Manning is the greatest prospect I've ever seen in my entire life, because I just got done watching Quinn Ewers throw a football that hummed in the air, you know, 6 months ago. And who's to say who's better? And, you know, a lot of times that's why people say recruiting is an inexact science. And to a certain extent, that's kind of the reason for it.
And there's also the ripples, right? There's the ripples, not just of the QB dominoes that fall, right? If Arch Manning decides to go to Georgia, then Alabama knows where it's going. Texas knows where it's going. They have their backup plans in place and more dominoes fall. So everybody's sort of waiting for Arch. And then you have the receivers who are going to say, I want to catch balls from Arch Manning, and I want to go to that school now. I want to, you know, the offensive linemen who say they're building something at this school, the symbolic nature of Arch Manning committing there. And I'm glad you brought up Quinn Ewers, because the Ohio State quarterback room, of which you are especially familiar, was fascinating last year. Everybody knew it was not going to last, especially as C.J. Stroud became more and more successful. But when you mentioned that, you know, Georgia has a five-star waiting, obviously Alabama, I think it's what, Ty Simpson is in Tuscaloosa. All of these top level schools are not skipping five-star quarterback class prospects. What is it about Ohio State right now? What was that room like last year? Why did Quinn Ewers go there for a year if that was not going to be a place that really looked like it was going to be a long-term solution for him with C.J. Stroud in front of him? What is it like managing those rooms now with every cycle, including somebody that your school will go after in a big way?
Well, I don't know exactly what Quinn Ewers' main motivation was. The idea was that he went there to go get paid for an NIL deal. And people like to say that he signed a $1 million contract. I would eat my hat if he actually earned $1 million.
Right.
I think that that's the most frustrating thing about NIL, is that it's not public information. So anybody can say someone's making something, but you can't verify it.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea, you know, at the time was that he's going to go to Ohio State a year early, make whatever money he can from an NIL standpoint, you know, maybe not start right away, because how could you? The guy arrived on campus 3 weeks before the season started. You know, give it the full season and then come back next year, which would be coming into this year, sit behind Stroud or whoever won the job again. And then as a redshirt sophomore, which really would have been his redshirt freshman year if you take into account that he was already supposed to be in high school for one of those years, step in and try to compete for a starting job. So, like, to me, when he committed and enrolled early, it made sense. But if his anticipation was, I'm going to go to Ohio State and in 2.5 weeks, I'm going to be starting over another top 100 player who's been in the program for a year, that's borderline insanity. And the thing that's really, really tough about, you know, quarterbacks in general, because of the money that's been sunk into these training programs, because of the Elite 11s and the openings and the camps that these kids go to, there's a return on an investment that these parents and these families are hoping to receive, and they don't want to wait as long as you used to. You know, back in 2005, which is like the golden era of when I was consuming the football or the sport of football as a fan, mm-hmm. there was a certain level of honor to going to a program and sitting for 2 or 3 years, learning the system, being a good teammate, becoming a leader and stepping into that role when you've earned it. Those days are over. If kids aren't playing their freshman year at the earliest or, you know, by the latest, their sophomore year, they're going to be gone. So when you say, how do you manage that room? In my opinion, there is no managing it. The idea is you pick the best player on your team to play the quarterback position in that given year. And if people leave as a result of it, there's always a five-star quarterback or another quarterback coming right. in through the rankings next year. And there's no way to properly appease every single person on your roster in the world of the transfer portal. People can leave freely. And there are a lot of quarterbacks that play on Alabama's rosters and the Clemsons and the Ohio States that could go compete and maybe start at 85% of the other schools in the Power Five that can just go do that now. So it's going to be a nightmare for people in trying to. I mean, I remember when I was covering Ohio State, had Braxton Miller, JT Barrett, Cardale Jones, and who am I forgetting? There's one other one that was on the roster all at the same time. Like, and those, right. those days don't exist anymore. And that's right. fine. So, but the idea now is,
I mean, one of them switched positions because of it, Braxton.
Yes. Yeah. And in my opinion, was the best quarterback out of all of them at the college right. level. Right. So, you know, I think Joe Burrow was the other one. Forgive me for forgetting that.
He lost out to Dwayne Haskins. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've had a lot of really, really good quarterbacks at that school. And,
sure.
you know, some have left and won the Heisman and are now the best player or one of the 5 best players in the NFL. And, you know, some other guys have been Heisman finalists. And what you do is you piecemeal together what you think it's going to be. And it's funny because we used to play a game, my coworker Bill Landis and I, of who's going to be the starting quarterback at this program in 4 years. And if you play that game at any place, you're right. going to be wrong 90% of the time. So it's just kind of like the new world of the game. And the sooner that these kids are ready to play and the sooner you can get them on the field, that's the best shot you have at having a bona fide quarterback for 2 or 3 years that you can build a system around. But depth and patience and leadership and learning the playbook and all those things that would make our dads proud while they sip whiskey, it's not there anymore.
One of the things that's fascinating, and maybe this has become more commonplace just with how easy it currently is to move around if you're not satisfied in a place, if it's not a fit a year or two after you get there, is the geographic footprints of quarterbacks right now. It's not just like a California kid heading to Alabama. Like, I believe Iowa has a blue chip quarterback coming in from New Jersey. I want to say Purdue has one coming in from Louisiana. Utah has one coming in from Mississippi. Do you think we're seeing, and I don't have the data, but do you think we're seeing more guys, especially who are more and more coveted, those 4 and 5 star guys, taking more geographic and or system chances? Because, like, why would a top-flight quarterback go to Iowa after what we saw from the Hawkeyes last year? Or even the inconsistency of Louisville. I think it's Pierce Clarkson from California heading to Louisville. Like, are we seeing more dice rolls because of the ease of movement, do you think?
I do have the data to a certain extent.
Okay.
So 5 or 6 years ago, I wrote a story for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and the headline was, it was a series about quarterbacks, and it was called QB Quest.
Yeah.
And basically what I did was I took every top 100 player during a 10-year period at every position. And I added up where they were from and the mileage to where they went to school in quarterback compared to linebacker, cornerback, offensive line, tight end, and receiver tended to stay closer to home at a pretty dramatic rate.
Interesting.
There's something about quarterbacks being the hometown savior. There's something there.
Right.
I don't know what it is. There's theories about, you know, being loyal to home or being the face of the program and it being more appealing, being closer to where you are.
Being more familiar with the conference. Yep.
Yes. Whereas a tight end or a linebacker might not care as much as a quarterback because there's right. many of them on the roster and multiple players at those positions play at the same time. But I thought it was an interesting finding and I haven't done it again since, but it'd be very interesting now to do that again.
Right.
And compare it to the findings of 5 years ago. It was a lot of Google Maps. It was a lot of adding and averaging, but it was interesting. And now I think that the entire nature of the sport has changed. Like, national recruiting in general is so prominent, even at places that didn't typically do it that way. You know, I mean, I guarantee you right now, without even looking, if you went in Iowa's class, I bet you they've signed more out-of-state prospects in the last 3 years than the previous five combined, just based on the way that the trend is. So, you know, are people taking more chances? Sure, if I were a five-star quarterback or any quarterback, and I'd got an offer from a school that in the past I would have been dissuaded to go to because I was afraid I wouldn't get on the field, why not go there, be a part of the experience for a year? You know, use the facilities, get coached by, you know, better assistants. And if it doesn't work out, you've got nothing to do because you can go back to the place that you would have gone to in one offseason and be the starter the following year. So I don't think that the you know, that the gravity of that decision isn't the same anymore because of the ease of movement, which then makes people looser and more willing to take risks while in that scenario. Like Maryland, for instance, I think has signed three top 50 players in the last week of the year, or the last week of the signing period, the last 3 years, and all three of those guys, if I'm not mistaken, have already entered the portal.
Right.
And it's like that, but that makes it hard on places like Maryland, because, you know, getting the player is the hard part, but keeping them is the harder part. So if guys are going to come and leave it, I think that as things continue on this way, the actual meaning of the final recruiting rankings is diminishing year by year, which is scary for my job security, but it's true.
Yeah.
And what you said is 100% accurate. Why not take a stab at it? Because worst case scenario, I'll just transfer home next year.
Right. Fair enough. And one of the things you brought up the name, I think, with Dante Moore, right? A five-star quarterback. I want to say he's in the Detroit area.
He is. Martin Luther King High School.
Okay. So he's in that Midwestern Big Ten footprint, a footprint in which basically no blue chip quarterbacks go on to succeed. I don't know why that is. I don't know if you've looked into that. I don't know if it's just a crazy coincidence. And I don't know if
you mean
you
succeed
yourself,
in the NFL or succeed on the field.
No, on the field in college. Like if you look at the past, I don't know, decade or so, like there have been like obviously Terrell Pryor succeeded from Pennsylvania. He's from Western PA, right? He's from the yep. greater Pittsburgh area. But outside of there may be a couple of exceptions. But if you look at like the 4 and 5 star quarterbacks from the Midwest, by and large.
Oh, you mean from where they're from in high school, not where
yes.
they play in college.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Correct.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. That a lot of them, an overwhelming number of them, are not all conference types, are not 4-year starters winning 10 games. Like, it's just, it's not a place to come from and be a very successful college quarterback. Is there a place where if you could choose, if you were running a generic school and you were saying, you give me 10 5-star quarterbacks from around the country, this is the location from which I'm trusting him the most to be a successful college quarterback.
It's so funny that you just said that, Dan, because I never really put that together. I just went and looked at just like the 2018 class randomly.
Yep.
And the top 14 or 15, okay, the top 10, there's only one player from the Midwest who is at the quarterback position, and he's number 10. So everybody yep. else is from somewhere else, and that's Phil Jurkovec. So, and you know, whether he was successful or not, I guess is still to be seen, but
right.
that is an interesting dynamic. So, hey, I'm sorry. The question.
So my question is basically, is there a part of the country that you would most trust a quarterback, being from, like that he is prepared to, that he has had the training to, that he has faced the competition to ultimately give himself the best chance to succeed in college?
Atlanta.
Okay.
I think Atlanta is a pretty good place to start because Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence were from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They've got a high quality of football there. They take it very seriously down there. It's a very highly concentrated area for recruiting, so the standard is higher, I think. I think that the more programs that are in a school hallway makes that school want to be better in all regards. So I think the elevated nature of Georgia football has certainly been the case, but it would be a very interesting study. Again, don't have the data. We
right.
should just rename the show Don't Have the Data. But
that's fine.
I think that...
No, I just want theories. That's all
yeah,
I want.
Yeah, no, theory.
You.
Atlanta is the place that really stuck out to me because like even some of the California kids, there's yep. a lot of really good California kids that come up, but I don't know, like, unless I'm forgetting somebody obvious and I look like a moron, which is a daily occurrence in my life, like JT Daniels and Tyler Buchner. I know he's very young. Maybe he'll be a star one day, but
right.
a lot of the guys that have come from California in the recent past... Tanner McKee at Stanford, or maybe it's still too, you know, Matt
well,
Corral.
He was LDS. I don't know. Tyler Buchner is actually from Metro Chicago area, but transferred there early
okay.
on in high school. Yeah.
You know, Adrian Martinez, I guess, is from Fresno.
Yep.
Just trying to think like, and also the one thing that, you know, you mention it, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, and Andy Staples went out to Arizona and did a great story
sure.
on this, but Arizona has had a lot of very good quarterbacks come out.
Yeah.
In the last 4 or 5 years, and has somehow has become one of the states that has produced those. So, but I think that if you were talking about city of where you could feel good about the player you're getting, regardless of what position, but especially a quarterback, I think Atlanta would be a really good place to start.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Now with the dawn of things like NIL, do you see any kind of like shift in the way that some of these top flight recruits go about their business when it comes to picking a school? Has it changed the way that you cover it, the way that you project forward, you know, how things are going to shake out at the end of a recruiting cycle?
Well, I'm happy that you asked that because it's like the elephant in the room. You know, you can't talk about quarterback recruiting without discussing this, especially considering the fact The Athletic just posted a story about an unnamed recruit that everybody knows who it is. It took $8 million
right
over a 4-year period. And I got into an argument with a coworker the other day that said, you know, I was the number one person that would say, if you pick a school because of NIL and you're going to make that decision for $50,000, you're a moron and you're short-sighted and you know the way that money works. But if somebody offered me $8 million over 4 years, I think that that is enough money to make where I'm going a secondary concern. Like if I were a 5-star quarterback and somebody wanted to pay me $8 million over the course of a 4-year period to go to Miami of Ohio, I think I would consider that. Because what's the main goal for a quarterback? Is it to be famous and to be the starting quarterback at USC and get ladies? Or is it to get wealth, long-term wealth that you can set up your family for a long period of time? And 50 grand or 100,000, maybe even 300,000 isn't enough to change your life forever. But if you start getting into numbers where like $8 million, where you have already successfully achieved financial security, which is the main goal for everybody at age 18 before you even get out of the blocks, then that kind of changes your mind a little bit. Now, the question isn't how much are you getting paid? The question probably is what's the difference between school B and school A? But, you know, now if Arizona comes up with a collective that says, hey, you know what, we're going to pay somebody $8 million and Alabama is paying two, why wouldn't you go to Arizona? And you still could get drafted there. So sure. The idea of the collectives and how much money is at stake here, I think is a very interesting dynamic because, you know, people talk about leveling the playing field, but how does NIL play a factor into this? Well, if some school that is in the Power Five wants to pay somebody $8 million just to go there and play, and that's guaranteed money, regardless of whether you're injured or not, you won the game. You've already ascended to the level of football where you've achieved insurmountable wealth, you know, within reason, from the game of football, and you haven't even started college yet. So to me, how is that going to change it? If this becomes normal and the big schools like Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia and stuff aren't going to back it up the same way that a place like Tennessee might, or a place, you know, in theory, Tennessee, because we don't know who it is, you know, it changes things. So the question to me, and I guess I could ask this back to you guys, is how much is going to a place that isn't typically known for football How much is going to a place that's known as a football powerhouse worth to you in dollars when somebody that might not be a football school is offering you more money? Also, I'll take into account that the best players in the NFL at the quarterback position have gone to a random collection of schools that aren't, you know, I know that Alabama recently has Jalen Hurts and Tua, but think about who are the best players at the quarterback position in the NFL, and you've got a bunch of Texas Tech and Cal in there, you know, and it's like these aren't schools that are known for that. So like to me, like if you start talking about that type of money, how much is going to Alabama worth and how much money is at stake for you to decide, well, you know what, where I end up is a secondary concern to the money.
Go to Mizzou and be Chase Daniels and make $300,000 a throw. How about that?
You know, what's funny about Chase Daniel is a good buddy of mine here in Texas that I've met played with Chase Daniel at Mizzou. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mizzou isn't the beacon of quarterback recruiting, but Chase Daniel's got a hell of a life. And if somebody wants to pay that man $8 million to go to Mizzou and maybe be like Chase Daniel, who was a really good college quarterback and has been good enough to stick around in the NFL long enough to fool people to pay him $4 million for a year not to do anything, that is a hell of a deal. And to me, it's like if Mizzou is paying me $8 million and Alabama's paying me $2 million, is the experience of playing at Alabama under Nick Saban and the development that they've shown that they can do worth the $6 million to you?
The other thing is this. People forget how few NFL quarterbacks are actually any good.
I know.
All right. We've got 32 teams.
Right.
How many are actually good? 8?
How many NFL teams are in a situation that are like, I don't have a quarterback and I can't find one?
Like 75% of them.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else is on the verge of being traded or dropped or cut. And so, you know, there's no way to answer the question. Obviously,
Kirk Cousins is like the richest guy at the port, one of the richest guys in the world playing quarterback. Yeah. And was he like a marginal player?
He may have boat goals that we need to talk to him about with Lake Minnetonka. I don't know. But like, it's impossible to answer. These kids are coming at this from a completely different perspective. We don't know what their situation is at home, if they need the support, if their family needs the support. Like, you get people from all walks of life. That level of wealth, though, $8 million, even like $1 million. I mean,
sure.
My question is it possibly going to be the norm? You know, is that something that we could see 5 years from now being something that all the schools do? Because that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to be in a world where Tennessee is paying $8 million and Alabama can't muster it up too. Like, I'm sure we'll get to a point where everybody's offering the same. But as it pertains to right now, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, Dan, but like,
no, you're good.
How much is going to Alabama worth?
Right. No, it's totally true. Because if you go to Alabama, you will be coached by presumably some of the best coaches. You'll be playing behind one of the, five best offensive lines annually at Alabama. You will be throwing to one of the three best groups of receivers and handing the ball to one of the four best groups of running backs. And you won't play until you are ready to a winning quarterback. You are not going to be thrust into action too early. Sometimes it'll be as a freshman, sometimes you'll be Mac Jones. And it's just you have a certain amount of trust that playing for Nick Saban will put you in a better position long term than playing for, you know, Jed Fish, if Arizona was your example, because there is an unknown quality to what Arizona's offensive line is going to look like, what their offensive coordinators, what their offensive systems are going to look like. And so I don't begrudge anybody for taking the money, because it is a weird, dangerous world out there financially. And so if you don't come from a place with a lot of money and a lot of opportunity, and that is life and a life-changing amount of money, you got to take it. But like, you wrote a piece today or this week about Arch Manning. It is at this point, Arch Manning is fortunate to be able to choose the best fit for him in an NIL universe. It is a privilege that he can say, I'm going to go to the place where I feel like I'm going to develop the best, where I fit in best with a coaching staff, with a community, with a campus, with academics, whatever. It's a weird thing that's going to, not that Tennessee isn't that place. It is a very quarterback friendly looking place. They also might receive sanctions in a year. Who knows? But I just am never going to begrudge anybody for looking at the finances as a big deal in choosing a school. But in terms of long term, you can't just assume coaches are going to be around forever. Receivers are going to be around forever. But when you are comparing Tennessee to Alabama or Arizona to Alabama, you know that on the margins, Alabama is going to have give you every advantage to succeed long term. But there's just one guy on the field.
If Mac Jones went to Mizzou, he might not be
correct
an NFL starting quarterback.
McCorkle Jones?
Yeah. You have to you know, understand that going to Alabama puts you in the best scenario to not only succeed on the field and to win national championships and, you know, get drafted, but also just like your personal development and the longevity of the game.
Benefit of the doubt as well, right? Like you,
benefit
it's
of the doubt.
Easier to get overdrafted coming from Ohio State, right? It's easier to get overdrafted coming from Washington, Georgia, Oregon, wherever. And I mean, look, Christian, Hackenberg, Penn State, 5-star. So we're always going to look at him. 5-star former quarterback, major place, has a promising freshman year, overdrafted, given way too many chances, given the actual proven success. That's the difference in going to a major place that somebody's going to say, but so-and-so school liked him, so there's something there. There's a spark there.
Yeah.
And that's what you can't get necessarily at Arizona or Cincinnati or UCF or another place.
Is that more valuable than $6 million?
Right. Yeah, probably in the long term. Getting multiple chances in the NFL? Chase Daniel says likely.
Yeah. Yeah. I get, but this one also protects you from if you blow your knee out.
Totally
times,
true.
You know, yeah. So that also, you know, that helps. But yeah, I grew up in a middle class family. I didn't want for anything. We had food on the table. I've got a very blessed background. And I would take the money in a second.
Yeah.
And it's just like right now, if somebody said, "Hey, Ari, I'll give you $150,000 to go do something else that you don't want to do," I'd be like, "No way."
Right.
But if somebody was like, "I'll give you $8 million," I'd be like, "Where's the shovel, bro?" Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the way that it is. And
you got daycare bills.
Yeah, daycare bills. And by the way, holy shit. So I don't know if I'm allowed
you're
to cuss
good.
On this, but my God. My God.
Yeah, that falls into your theory that as soon as you become more domesticated, home ownership, children, wife, everything costs $1,000 minimum. Everything is $1,000 minimum. I like that theory of yours.
Yeah, it does seem like no matter what it is, it is $1,000. But I saw this meme on Instagram, which might not be true, but I sent it to a friend because I was arguing with him, and I don't want to veer off the quarterback.
No, you're
too
good.
Much. But the basically it's a breakdown or a budget breakdown of a couple that makes cumulatively $500,000 as a couple per year. 408, so $500,000 gross salary. You got an $18,000 408 contribution from both partners. Then the salary after the 401 contribution goes down to $464,000. Tax rate takes out $185,000 right off the top. You're at $278,000. Expenses, childcare for two kids is $42,000.
Uh-huh.
Food for the four, $25,000 for the year. Mortgage, $60,000. Property taxes, $20,000. Property insurance, $5,000. You go down the list, gas, car insurance, life insurance, clothes, and two vacations a year. You know, it's a nice lifestyle because if you're paying $5,000 a month for your mortgage, you got a nice house.
Sure.
But it's all said and done. You're at $7,300 of excess at the end of the year. And that doesn't even account for miscellaneous, which could mean something came up like your roof is leaking or your car exploded or all the other mindless bullcrap that we spend money on from an unexpected place.
Pizza and it's like oven you might, upgrades. Yep.
Yeah. Like things that you spend money on that you're like, why am I spending money on this?
Yeah.
Like my window's cracked. So I'm just going to spend $2,000 to fix a window in my house that does the same thing that it should have already done. And it's just a waste of money. $500,000 is a lot of money for two people on an annual basis. That's $5 million over a 10-year period. And if you read down that breakdown, they're actually not that affluent.
Go take Jimmy Haslam's money. That's the lesson here. Don't look back.
Yeah. And also, if you put it in the market and you're patient, maybe take a mil, you know, get your Jordans, get your Rolex, do what you want to do with the million, take the seven, you know. Throw
rent
it in
a
there,
yacht for a week in the Adriatic.
Yeah, I get it. I'm no stranger to irrational splurges, but
yeah,
it just kind of is a nice stark reminder that $100,000 is not that much money anymore.
It goes quickly.
I just don't know, and like I feel blessed because you know we're in a pretty good position, you know, financially with some of this the savings that we've had and some of the fortunate things that have happened in our lives. But
right.
I don't feel. You know, like I can do anything I want. And I also don't know, and I have a lot of empathy for people who don't have much at all in how they were able to raise two or three children. Now their lifestyles vary. They're not getting married in Laguna and going on vacation and doing things that we're fortunate enough to do. But like, how does a single mother of three children, you know, working three jobs support their family. I don't know how these people do it, and they're superheroes.
Yeah. So now when we're into this new era of, we don't know what the contracts are, we don't know what, you know, the specific language in those contracts are, but do you see us entering, or have we already entered into a phase of the recruiting world of more organized negotiation that Nico at Tennessee, allegedly, with the deal with the collective that Tennessee has put together, are people on his behalf, or are you seeing a world in which somebody, and you know, we always had the, you know, the Cecil Newton story with, you know, Mississippi State and Auburn allegedly, but are we entering into a phase where we are going to have representatives and savvy representatives at that, savvier representatives than just a dad, an uncle, a trainer, something like that, saying, okay, Florida State is offering this much with this language. We're going to go back to you now, Oregon or USC or Michigan. What is it that you can do? Are we entering that territory?
It'll be
in a
very
savvier way than usual.
How do you guys do your taxes? Do you do them yourself, or do you have somebody?
I have an accountant.
How, if you don't mind me asking, how much are you paying the guy per hour?
I don't know.
Well, mine is $365 an hour, and I don't know if that's typical or not.
Right.
I don't know how much it would cost for a lawyer to sift through all those pages of documents and to go back and forth. And I know that a lot of the people who are in that position do not have the means to invest $15,000 for proper contract negotiation. But to answer your question, I do believe that to be, you know, on the verge of that. Because when you're starting to talk about that type of money, you got to be some sort of asshole to not do 100% of your research to make sure that you're ensuring,
definitely,
you know, maximizing whatever potential you have there. So, you know, if we are getting to a point where you have collectives doing recruiting trips on their own without the staff there and having informal meetings with family members and discussing these things,
mm-hmm.
and there's five collectives coming at you, then of course you're going to pit them against each other.
Yep.
You know, it's like that commercial for the banking, you know, what happens when banks compete, you win, you know, like that's, mm-hmm. that's kind of like the way I view it. So, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of recruits and their families are far more apt to understand the intricacies of the game now than they were 10 years ago, because the internet is a wonderful beacon of information and resource. But as it pertains to like lawyers and contract negotiations and, you know, back and forth, there's going to be a tremendous amount. And maybe they won't have to pay it up front. You know, these guys are smart enough to know that, say, hey, give me 6% of whatever the contract is and I'll take care of this for you. You know, and maybe we'll be at that level. But there's going to be a tremendous amount of expense and research and negotiation. You know, when it comes to this sort of thing. Now, the question that I have more than anything is how common is $8 million over a four-year period going to be? Is that the cap? Is that the beginning? Is that the baseline?
Right.
What are we doing with the three-star offensive guard that plays in the same position or the mm-hmm. same roster? And what does it mean for other players? You know, if Tennessee is allegedly the school that has got a collective that's paying Nico $8 million, then what does
that mean?
I hope
it is, because he just committed there. I hope, you know, the Michigan State collective is not paying Tennessee's quarterback, but yeah.
No. What I'm saying is we don't know if Nico got a dime.
Right.
So, like, the idea is now if Tennessee goes into another person's living room
mm-hmm.
and that person is a four-star receiver from Fresno,
right,
is that person going to be like, whoa, this guy got that. I believe that I'm worth this. And the other thing that I think is an interesting discussion is in the NFL, what do we see all the time? We see a receiver on team B say, whoa, wait a minute, that guy just made this much money. I'm better than him. I want more than him.
Right.
And it's like an increasing salary structure where people are going to compare what people got, you know, in this area of the country from this program at the same position and judging based on what your ability is, you know, setting a market now.
And how real the information is about a Texas receiver or a Rutgers receiver or a Wisconsin receiver. Like how do you trust any of it?
Because these people who go public with this information have an interest in doing so.
Right.
They want to promote what they're doing and they want to. But in 6 years when everyone's doing it, I don't know what there is to gain about releasing the terms of any individual deal. So, you know, how we navigate these financial waters is a very tricky discussion. And I think it's going to be murky. It's going to be muddy. It's going to be weird, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it is very fascinating to me. And I'm working on a story right now or thinking about working on a story right now about what does this mean for a place like, and let's just stick with Arizona because I went there as the
right.
example, but what does this mean for a place like Arizona? Is if they create a collective which doesn't have the means or the passion as a fan base to match what we all know Tennessee is able to do, what is their collective's goal? Is their collective's goal to just maintain the recruiting level that they are right now and improve to scale the same way that the other teams have, not catching them, but just improve as much as the other ones are so the gap remains the same?
Right.
Or are they going to try to throw money at five-star quarterbacks and start to shake up the market? Because there are so many different programs that are going to try to do this. You've got collectives popping up at Rutgers and Wake Forest and all these other places. And the fascinating thing to me is that, well, once Alabama, Georgia, and all the other big dogs catch up to what Tennessee is doing, what is it going to mean for the middle tier programs that don't have the same financial backing or the same passion from the fan bases? And what's the goal of that going to be? But
well,
yes.
I think, isn't it what, like, and Ty can speak to this better than I can, isn't it what like savvy EPL clubs do, in that they position themselves in the best possible case to find value to like, we are going to be, if we are the Arizona Wildcats, if I am Jed Fish, if I am, who's their ace recruiter, Johnny Nansen on defense, if mm-hmm. I'm those guys, I say, how do we annually establish ourselves to be the destination for the quarterback leaving Texas, for the quarterback leaving Oklahoma, for the quarterback leaving Oregon, for the quarterback leaving UCLA, for the best possible Southwest and West Coast footprint transfer, not unlike what Oklahoma did in succeeding in attracting Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, looking at the Big 12 footprint, you know, super talented guys who were ultimately not a fit at their previous places. I think it's, you're actually probably going to have a better batting average because you'll have a better sense of who these guys are as college quarterbacks, at least practicing, if not playing in games. That, I think, is the move for a school like Arizona to say, what can we do to attract Spencer Rattler? What can we do to attract Tanner Mordecai? What can we do to attract Hudson Card? I think that's probably the win, that you're looking for value more than you're looking for a place at the table of big spenders.
And isn't that a little bit what Deion Sanders referenced in one of his recent interviews? You know, trying to leave room on the roster for some of those guys who might want to go elsewhere after they've got a year or two on campus, didn't get their fair shake at the starting job. Now they've got a little bit more development and they're also, you know, perhaps more mature from being on a college campus for a couple of years.
Yeah, I am very fascinated by the portal guys, because these guys go into a program and then they disappear and they're behind the scenes. And if they don't play,
sure.
You know, and I don't know how much insight they're getting from current coaches. Maybe they're all texting each other behind closed doors and saying, this guy's really good, or this guy could play for you. But I sometimes wonder too, like, blindly going into the portal and trying to take somebody that's kind of vanished for 2 years seems to me to be just as big of a risk as taking somebody out of the recruiting ranks. So, you know, it's
they're more easily vetted though, right? Right.
Probably,
you can talk to people around them where just like, hey, they're Joe Burrow, right? They had bad luck. They were behind some good quarterbacks. There's a lot of upside. Who, by the way, Joe Burrow is a blue chip quarterback from the Midwestern footprint who succeeded. Let's be clear.
Yeah, that's true. But he's a Tiger now.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying succeeded anywhere.
Yeah, you're right.
But like Hunter Johnson was one of those who didn't. Yeah.
No.
It makes me want to go add it up, Dan.
Yeah, go for it.
I was going to ask you, Ari. I want to ask about you for a second, if I could.
Oh boy.
I mean,
this is your cue to turn it off, everyone.
with respect,
you had
to
a warning,
and covering college football, of course. Yeah. But I mean, you're clearly somebody who pays attention to the nuance. You told us earlier you were measuring as the crow flies from hometowns to eventual colleges. So clearly, you care about the small details that make this whole thing go. How do you like your job now? And I don't mean that in like a negative way.
Ooh.
To get you fired.
No, it's
no,
no,
I love
I'm not
going
to get fired. No, I resent it.
But it's different, right? Yeah. The 360 view that you have to consider is dramatically different. Probably even than when you started this gig, right? Like, it's
funny
changed.
That you're asking me that, because I've had real internal discussion, and like, my goal in my career has never been to be a recruiting guy. Like, my goal has always been to, you know, I guess not to pump up Andy Staples too much, but to be in a position like that where mm-hmm. you're writing about everything. Like, we wrote about Bishop Sycamore and I covered the Cotton Bowl. Like, you know, like, those are the types of things I'm mm-hmm. trying to transition it. But like, I think recruiting is a major piece to covering college football, and you can't do it without it. So even if I became Bruce Feldman one day, like, I would still have a very, and he does this to a very good job too, but I would still want to cover it. But the thing that I resent, not your question, but the thing that I resent is, in recruiting, there is a large amount of analysis that takes place. Where are people from? Where are they going? What classes are being signed at what schools? What are our normal, reasonable expectations for those schools and stuff? And if the answer every single time somebody goes somewhere is that person is paid, then we are robbed of that analysis. Now, we'll be able to say, well, here's the best class in the country, or here's who got the best players. But how could you be critical of a coach anymore? How could you be complimentary of a coach? Like, you know, for instance, is Tennessee's coaching staff basking in the glory of getting this five-star quarterback, or did a collective pay this kid enough where it completely removes any discussion from it? So, like, I do worry about that. I do think that if in 7 or 10 years from now, what everything we just got done talking about is happening, and you got lawyers negotiating contracts and players are going to the highest bidder, it removes any sort of analysis or critical thinking that takes place in my area of work. So, you know, I think there will always be stories, and players will always have stories to tell, regardless of where they're going. But like that fun analysis of why did quarterbacks stay closer to home than other positions? It's like, well, if the answer in 4 years is the money did it, then it's just like, how interesting is that? You don't have NFL people, you know, writing in-depth stories about how rosters are built other than draft success and free agent signings, and it's all financial.
Right. The good news,
which sucks.
The good news for you is Tennessee was not the only school with an affiliated collective or booster or NIL situation that was willing to pay for Nico, right? That there are other schools. And that, you know, if you listen to the people who know, one of whom is you, it's that if you are in the West Coast footprint, why do you stay out West right now, given the seriousness or lack thereof of a lot of programs in that conference right now? That if you can look at Brock Bowers going from California to Georgia, that you can look at Bryce Young, that you can look at, you know, DJU wasn't great for Clemson, but he did make that move, that clearly the southeastern part of the United States is where you go no matter where you are from, to play on the biggest stage and give yourself the best opportunity to be seen by the most people in the NFL or by NIL sponsors, whatever, that Tennessee is not an accidental fit for Nico. They play in the largest conference in college football on the biggest stage and playing against the biggest opponents, that he has the best possible opportunity to prove himself given the visibility of his destination. So yeah. I think there's still room for you to provide analysis that is outside of financial.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, if you go look at a lot of the comments and stories that I've written, is who cares? You got paid anyway.
Oh, it's comments.
It's like no, I know. But like, if the general fan, and I know that like maybe sometimes I have a hard time like hearing one person on Twitter and thinking that everybody's thinking that way, and I've got to work on that. But if there's a large portion of the college fan base that's going to view recruiting as who cares? They paid him the most. That kind of just strips the joy out of trying to come to the bottom of these things, because everything in college.
But that's your challenge.
But isn't that also a much smaller percentage of guys? Like, of course, the headliners, right? Arch Manning, he's going to get headlines. Nico, in this case, got headlines. But there are guys, plenty of guys who are three stars, who are, you know, low four stars that probably aren't in line for, you know, seven-figure deals from anybody. So I would, I hear what you're saying, at least
who
on
do
that
we write
top
about
line.
The most?
But, you know, when you go down a few pegs, there's still a lot of room for analysis.
And like, I do write stories about a two-star quarterback that no one's heard of that might be really good, but that's a small percentage of my job. You know, I'm writing about the most visual, or the people who have the most visibility, because that's the people that people care most about. So yes, I think that to a certain point that there is a scale of you have Arch Manning and then you have random three-star offensive tackle from Fresno over here, and they're in completely different categories.
God, there's no question. Just taking so many hits today.
You know, I think what I do, and I actually somebody made a comment on like a review on the Andy show, is that I come up with an example, and then I keep using that example over and over again.
Oh, I do
like,
that too.
I locked on Fresno in Arizona on this podcast, but I'm using them as a symbolic.
Sure.
Also, I've lived in both of those cities for short periods of time. So I wanted to, you know, make sure I paid. I mean, I did an internship in Fresno, California for 4 months in the summer of my junior year in college.
That's a tough summer.
But it was like the greatest job I ever had, because it was for MLB.com, and I covered minor league baseball for MLB.com. Mm-hmm. And I had my dad's Honda Accord, and I basically drove the entire state of California for an entire summer covering minor league baseball. And it was fun because they paid mileage, and I lived in the middle of nowhere in Fresno. Mm-hmm. So like, I had more money than I've ever had in terms of disposable income, because I was making like $2,000 a month just on mileage alone for a car that I didn't own. And that's where I've developed my propensity to want to play poker and gamble, because in Fresno, I had no friends and nothing to do on my off time. And they had a casino where the age was 18 to gamble at that time. So that's kind of like the manifestation.
The origin story. Yeah.
Yes. And there's a place called Me and Ed's Pizza in Fresno. That was pretty good.
Great. Okay.
That I remember, but it's been 15 years since I've been there now.
This is the obvious transition. This is the obvious segue to get you out on your boat goals from out of the San Joaquin Valley, out of the grapevine, out of the heat, onto a body of water with all the money you made at your 18 plus casino that you didn't spend at the pizzeria, that you
back
didn't spend
on gas.
Back in the days
when you leave the casino with $100 and feel like you hit the lottery. Those were the days.
Feel like a champion of champions. So money is no object. You get to choose where, on what kind of boat, with whom, what the experience is like. Is this current you? Is this past you? Is this future you? What are your boat goals?
Well, those answers would be completely different depending on what you are talking about, right?
Boat goals, and it could be parallel universe where it's like 23-year-old Ari, the Laker girls, Catalina Island. Like it
so
can
like
be
now
you
it's
want.
Like unfair because my fiance listens to these podcasts. What am I gonna say? I wish I was 23 years old and had 28 models on there and a pool and
sure.
clothes
okay,
were optional
we'll
and there was a cocaine
current.
Guy. Like, what am I gonna say? You know, like
current Ari, knowing that his bride may be listening.
Yeah, well, I love my bride very much, and mm-hmm. the beautiful thing about that is that I enjoy spending time with her. So current Ari, I think the boat would be the same in all the categories. So so I guess the boat goal would be the Wolf of Wall Street yacht that has a pool and a kitchen
helipad.
And a helipad. And, you know, there's one scene in that movie, and I know it's like such a frat dude, like simple, you know, basic guy thing to cite that movie, but it's the only movie really that kind of illustrates this, but there was a scene where he is sitting next to or laying next to Margot Robbie on the top of this boat. Mm-hmm. And there's like an aerial view of it. And they're just like sailing from one Mediterranean island to another. And like being able to have a boat like that, where you can travel around the most beautiful places in the country by sea, but mm-hmm. also feel like you're in a floating mansion that has every luxurious, you know, amenity that a human being could ask for.
Yeah.
I think is probably the only answer to this question. Like, I don't even know how else you could answer it. And here's the thing with me too. I've been fortunate enough. I went on a Mediterranean cruise with my parents, when I was 24.
Okay.
And I saw these in action. Like, I've been to Saint-Tropez. I've been to Monaco. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen these people who park their yachts or dock their yachts. You see, I don't even say it right.
Yeah.
And they come off the side of the boat, and like these boats are bigger than my house.
Yeah.
And you know, you have a staff and you have a wait, you know, a waiting staff and housekeeping, and they've got legitimate pools on there and
of
movie
course.
Theaters and hot tubs and kitchens and cooks and
so who are you
bedrooms.
Bringing with you? Who is in this grouping?
Well, my
people?
Kid and my wife have to come, right? My parents.
I don't think they do. It can be anybody.
My fantasy is to get a boat and leave my family.
I mapped out the friends that I would bring, and
I would
I don't,
bring all
I don't
of
think my kids would my 3-year-old and 1-year-old sons. I don't think would appreciate, and it would detract my attention. Right, that I want to be in the hot tub thinking about the appetizers that are being served to me. I don't necessarily want to be changing diapers.
So are we talking like boat goals for like how would you use a boat for a month right now? Or is this boat belonging to you?
A week. You get to charter a boat for a week.
Oh, if I charter a boat for a week, then me and all of my best guy friends.
Okay.
In Monaco with unlimited amount of money, throwing lobsters at people off the side of the thing.
That's
inviting
exactly
all
right
sorts of people onto the boat. Yeah, I thought you meant like how would you manifest it in your life?
No. We're not talking like Armageddon, Waterworld situation where you've got to live at sea for an extended period
no.
of time. We're talking you get unlimited funds 1 week at sea in some capacity on some boat, presumably with the helipad, Ari. How are you spending
that I think the actual answer would be because I would never betray my fiance's trust in a million years. I'd rather die.
Right.
I would want all of my best friends and their spouses with my wife, or future wife.
Great answer.
And we'd party like maniacs. Cause you know, Britt can get down. Like you see her at a bar at a dancing on a tabletop as a mother at 11 PM in Dallas. I mean, she knows how to party. She's a lot of fun. And just like going from city to city in the Mediterranean, mm-hmm. eating like kings, drinking like maniacs, pool that's the dream right there with all of my friends and their wives too.
Great. Ty, are you Ty's still sort of working out the details? I think ironing out the details.
I think
but Ty's I think he's bought
paddle
in.
Boat on local lake.
Lake Winnipompack.
I'm a huge fan of the boat.
Yeah.
I have like sort of sensory overload, Ari. I have too many thoughts in my head about how I'd want to spend that time. But Dan, what was the word that you introduced me to in the last podcast? The small lobster, Legostino?
The langostines?
Yeah.
Langostinos? Yeah.
Do you know what that is, Ari?
I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah. See, I haven't either. So I'm working through just some of the terminology here before I settle on some concrete boat goals, but I'll get there eventually.
Oh, yeah. I want a local person grilling seafood on the boat. That's a mandatory element to my boat goal.
You'd have an amazing, food can mean anything. I mean, you'd have a top flight chef. Mm-hmm. You'd have a pool, a movie theater, for those, times where you can look out the window and see the ocean, but also, watch a movie with people and hang out while you're going from place to place.
I want to slide off of the side
of
it.
That would be fun.
Of course.
It would just be one of the craziest, $100 million yachts you could come up with.
I think I would probably get the captain's hat. I would have my own ceremonial captains, and
I would not be wearing a shirt at any point during the week.
You would not what?
Not wear a shirt for even a minute.
No. I mean, occasionally, if I'm burnt up a little bit, I'll do a mid-level button, but I'm showing a lot of skin here.
Dan,
tarp off.
Would you or Ari, would you be interested in a Dwight Schrute type of situation where they give you a fake wheel so you feel like you're in charge?
No, I don't want to even go anywhere near a steering wheel. Okay. I want the ceremonial captain's hat. I would love to be referred to as skipper for the duration of this journey, but otherwise, no.
I'm in charge of who comes on and goes off the boat,
right. You're the bouncer. You're the bouncer.
Yes.
The manifest. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that would be and I don't know if it's just because I'm a snob.
Sure.
But I would want to stand on the back of the boat while they're backing it into Monaco with my shirt off in a Rolex, everybody looking at me and just going, wow. I wish I could be that guy. Wouldn't that feel good?
What does he do for a living?
Yeah, he actually is a...
He researched Midwestern.
He knows where Arch Manning's going.
I bet you if I did, I could make a lot of money off that information.
True.
Yeah, I was in Monte Carlo or whatever. I don't even know what it's called. We were on a boat, a charter boat, having a booze cruise or whatever. And this was back when I was covering Ohio State, and this huge Wolf of Wall Street-like yacht came up. And on the back, it said limited. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be Les Wexner's boat.
Yep.
And he was just out in the Mediterranean on this huge, massive boat that basically was one-fifth the size of the Titanic. And I just thought to myself, that guy and me live in the same city, and boy, are our lives different.
Yeah. Very much so. Okay, Ty, keep developing, keep researching.
I'm still working on it. Yeah, I'm still.
You're mapping. I cannot wait to hear.
You thought paddle boat in the lake, Ari? What kind of a Philistine am I?
He said, I was just teasing you. Dan said at the beginning, you're from Dallas. There's a lot of lakes around here. No boat that I'm going to be having is in the lake. But I'm assuming that all of us have the same boat. If you could have any boat in the world, of course you're going to take the craziest, most amazing. And I actually, it's funny that you mention it, but on Instagram, I think I follow a luxury yacht Instagram that just posts pictures of amenities on luxury yachts because I like to, look at things like that.
Of course, and aspirational.
I think once you get to a certain point, though, all of them are amazing. So, how many extra bedrooms do you need? Enough to sleep everybody, enough showers and things like that. But as long as there's a pool, I think the pool on the boat is the most important element.
I just
outside of the kitchen.
Ty's initial answer was something along the lines of nothing fancy. I'm an easygoing guy. Maybe a lake.
I mean, there was also part of me that didn't understand the question.
That's fair.
All right.
Okay.
So, but it's me, too. I was misguided, too, because I had nine different fantasies there. I had single 23-year-old Ari fantasies.
Of course.
Let's be honest. If you're single 23 and you haven't met the love of your life yet, you're probably going to have the best possible week a human being could have on that thing, especially if you're the bouncer of who comes on and goes off the boat. But, thinking about it as a family man now, that fantasy is much different than the other one. So if I had to pick one, just don't make me answer that. But those are very different questions. Now, the one thing I will say before we go, and I know that you guys are probably dying to end this because I'm talking too much. But
all good. Keep going.
I'm not a boat person. If somebody said, would you rather have a private plane or a private boat? I think I would take the plane.
Yeah, I'm not making you choose. I'm not trying to make an equivalency here. A plane gets you places and a boat is somewhere where you can chill, right? A plane is a means to an end, essentially. And a boat is where, yes, you can travel via boat, but I think in this scenario, a ritzy boat is meant for parking.
Yeah. But my friend actually bought a boat. Not a big boat.
I know,
boat
no, people
like
own boats.
And I feel like buying like a boat that's like a two-person speedboat, it sounds awful.
People love that, though. I think the key is just to know people who do that, not to be that person.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they always say. Know somebody who has a boat. Don't ever own one.
Don't buy the boat.
All right.
Yeah. Why don't we leave it there, guys? Don't buy a boat.
I love how no matter what I say on a show, I'm automatically have never gotten through a 60-minute podcast without offending 20% of the people.
No, that's okay. But if you are offending nobody, then we probably wouldn't have you back.
Okay.
I said that on the last show, don't buy a boat. You're good.
No, that's okay.
You're in good company. Ari Wasserman of The Athletic, of The Andy Staples Show. Go check him out. Get his fine recruiting analysis. It is always a pleasure, sir. We'll have you again sometime soon, okay?
I love you guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Love you.
All right, there you go. Ari Wasserman, he's got boat goals. He's got boat goals.
Yeah.
I don't like you punking me for not having a very specific answer. I love boats. You know I'm a boat person. We've talked about this before.
Definitely.
I just want to take more time to think this through before I commit to anything. I'm sure. Of the tens of thousands of folks that listen to this show every single time we drop it, I'm sure about 0.2% actually give a damn about my answer here. But
no, I agree.
I am taking this seriously. It is my prerogative to do so.
Do you have another genre of ritzy goals? Do you have car goals? Do you have house goals? Do you have vacation goals? Do you have plane goals? Do you have toy goals in terms of technology, that kind of thing? Like, you know, that you want to, you know, create a home theater of some kind. Like, are you more specific in your ritzy dreams about another area of luxury?
First off, even my ritzy dreams aren't that ritzy.
Oh, come on.
They're just not. They're just not. Yeah. I just don't think in those terms. I don't know. Like, I'd buy an extra microphone. I don't know. But I will say this.
Do you have a mic goal? Like, if suddenly we had a $1,000 budget for microphones, are you buying the, what's it called?
The only one I don't own is the Electro Voice.
Yeah.
That's the only one I don't own.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. When we were up at doing that video show in 2012 for SB Nation, they had the Electro Voice is up there and I loved it.
Yeah.
But the one we have is fine. We have the same mic. The Shure is fine.
Right.
I will say this about my luxury goals, if you want to call it.
All right. I'm ready. I love this.
I did have the pleasure once of flying private. I told you about this.
Yeah.
It was mostly by accident. It was for the mysterious day job.
Mm-hmm.
It was unlike any experience I'd ever had before. I hate planes.
Okay.
I don't like planes at all. This was an experience. This is an experience. We weren't exactly in the lap of luxury. They weren't coming around with, you know, tall boys of champagne or anything, but it was just so convenient that I think if I had limitless funds, that's something I'd need to consider.
So what is your biggest inconvenience at the moment that could be solved simply by throwing money at it?
I mean,
that you don't have, but could have someday.
Biggest inconvenience.
Right. Like, you know, sometimes like if you're living somewhere and you would like to go to a weekend home instead of driving your magnificent car that you take a helicopter, right? That you get to avoid traffic that way.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is going to be the dorkiest answer possible, but I could really go for some quicker internet here.
I was going to say that's not unreasonable.
I could really go for some quicker internet and I don't believe the cable company has any plans to change the infrastructure anytime soon. They actually just upgraded it like 2 years ago. So
what are you getting up?
Excuse me?
What are you uploading? What speed are you uploading at?
I think only like 25.
Yeah, I get 40. I'm a gigabit down, but I have this awful Xfinity. Maybe in the new house, whenever it is that we go there, finally moving. I think we'll try to do, I think it's gigabit up and down.
Yeah, you need
but
the
I don't
fiber.
Have it now.
We need fiber.
Yeah.
I
need to lay the fiber, right.
Yeah, so something like some sort of tech goals. You know, I mean, everybody's got some home renovations in mind, things like that. But no, I need time to think about this. The first thing that came to mind was the Electro Voice RE45. So I've got issues.
Sure. I would address almost related inconveniences. I would do private chef and personal trainer to sort of offset their
See, that's
their
a good answer.
On me.
That's a good,
yeah.
good answer. I'm just
good
not
answer, good answer. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just not programmed to think like this, but this is why
I would upgrade AV upgrade travel. The private jet thing doesn't, I mean, that's, it's, I'm sure it's nice. I've never been on a private jet. But yeah, that's why I talk about boat goals, because that's so outlandish. The other thing is that I would definitely build my own fantasy factory.
Well, we're going to close out with this. Okay.
Okay.
I saw probably on Instagram somewhere, but somebody with way too much money decided that they were going to burrow deep into the earth and sort of build a hidden cavern within their house.
Interesting. Okay.
And I suppose it could double as a panic room or a bomb shelter. That's not really the motif I'm going for here.
Right.
But I just sort of like the idea of having a trick wall or a bookcase.
You want a bat cave is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of zoning laws would allow for such thing. But if I could have a trick wall in the basement that would lead into the bat cave of sorts.
Right.
I don't know what I'd do there, but to have it.
Okay.
To be able to show friends like, hey, push on this wall right here.
Right.
Watch what. That'd be kind of fun.
I think what you would do in a heartbeat, and I just looked this up. I just had to Google his name. Lucius Fox. You know that name? It's Morgan Freeman's character from Batman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I think you could commission somebody to say, here is not necessarily from a weapons perspective,
no,
but just from a technology perspective. If you're like, I am going to create an incubator of things, of toys that I just would like to have in my life, right? I think that's something that you would pour your money into.
Like a Tony Stark type of situation.
That's exactly right. That's why I said Lucius Fox, because he has the, you know, he was associated with Batman.
I'm not opposed to this. I almost called
that's
Tony.
Well, it just made me think when you said Bat Cave or when I said Bat Cave in response to your, you know, hidden cavern, I just think you would love to commission a tinkerer that you could every so often go down and say, what do you have for me, Steve?
Commission.
What do you have for me, Deborah?
Tinkerer. Right. Yeah. Okay. SolidVerbal@gmail.com is the email address. As always, we appreciate Ari Wasserman's time, his insight, his know-how when it comes to all things college football and recruiting. Don't forget, going out to verballers.com. Every Friday, we drop a new Brew and A episode. We answer your questions. It's the most fun that Dan and I have in any given week, answering questions from the Verballerhood. So verballers.com, again, is where you can find that. Don't forget to subscribe. And don't forget once more to check out solidgiveaway.com, Dan. That is all I have for now. Anything further for you?
No, I am deep in the personal chef and personal trainer mindset right now and how I get there. It's going to take some time.
It's going to take some time. Yeah.
For that guy over there.
Yeah. Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt. We will talk to you all in a few short days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.